Right, it's been a while since we were in this Torah, and the third Torah we just started, and we're learning it. Unlike the earlier ones, we're learning it a little bit in English because of the difficulty of it, and the advantage of using Rabbi Kramer's notes. So we're learning it inside the English. So I'm hoping that you didn't throw out anything like this with the chametz. It's not chametz thick. That you still have, and I think I even gave you a few pages further because I found a few extra. So I think you should have focused that until 97. Yeah? Yeah. You know what that means? That means if one person has it, it means that everybody got it.
Yeah, but I was before.
Oh, you are okay. So I have a few of those. I have a few extra of those. That's 94, 95, 96, 97. It's two on each. 94, 95, and 96, 97. Yeah.
Is there an extra one there?
Your wife took everything. The story of your life, of Yanko. She wants to deliver it personally, but we're just going to send it over.
But
that's only run by 93.
Yeah, we're on 93. We're on 93 right now, but soon to be Mitzvah 94. It's only in Swansea. It comes out this parasha, really. We're learning. It's not possible to start chazering the Torah that we started, but the basic nakuda you all know that have been coming, that Rabbi Nachman here is teaching us in this Torah the advantage of hearing a niggun from an adam kosher, from the right source, and that when a person listens to the niggun of an ish kosher, it doesn't have to be a tzaddik, but of a kosher, of an eilech yid, when a person hears the niggun of an eilech yid, so Rabbi Nachman taught that helps in one's avodas Hashem, that's beneficial in one's avodas Hashem, to hear the niggun of an eilech yid. And, of course, the zelu mazeh, the flip side of that is to hear a niggun from a rasha is something which is damaging to one's avodas Hashem. It can hurt a person's avodas Hashem. And Rabbi Nachman was explaining that, and by the way, we learned that hearing such a niggun means even if the niggun itself is a nice song, but if the song is being sung by, or played, or sung in particular, by a menagin who's a rasha, then that could be koshel avodas Hashem. Doesn't mean you can't serve God, but it's something which creates obstacles in one's avodas Hashem to hear nigunim from rishayim, from those who are, God forbid, who are evil. And Rabbi Nachman is explaining that the reason for this is that nigun song comes from a very, very, very high place, that we might not realize it, and we think that a niggun stam, that a person just takes a niggun from this world, but it's not true. A niggun comes, as Rabbi Nachman was explaining, we're learning that a niggun comes from the same place that nevuah comes from. Therefore, we learn that, Rabbi Nachman says that chazan and chazoin come from the same word, chazan abal menagin, and chazoin, the one who sees visions. And according to the Zohar Kodesh and Ari Kodesh, Nigunim come from such a place of Netzach and Hayd, from a very, very high, we're going to see more about the Netzach and Hayd, this thing with Malchus in a minute, comes from a very, very high and exalted place. In Kedusha, it comes from a place that can, when you hear a Nigun from a good source, it could be very inspiring. It could be more inspiring than anything else in one's Avodas Hashem, to hear a Nigun from an Adam Kasha. It can be unbelievably inspiring. On the other hand, when a person listens to the nigunim of a rasha, then he's drawing from the high place of a very high level of impurity that stands in contrast to the high level of holiness. It's not stam. You listen to a song from a Rosh or a Goyish song, it's not stam, meaningless. People, it doesn't make a difference. Everybody says I don't listen to the lyrics. That's not the nakuda. That's a separate problem. But the shurish of nagunim are taken from the klipa, from the sitrach, from the other side, from a very, very high place, which we're going to talk more about. And we're going to talk about what can we do to cure ourselves and to purify ourselves from these things and to sort of strengthen our resistance to this. Even if a person goes into a store, they're playing, even if you don't turn on to listen to, is surrounded by such nagunim, and there's a way to strengthen one's resistance and one's koichas to be able to deal with the nagunim. We're on page 93 in the note on top. We're just doing these notes here, and the reason I said from the parasha, you recall that the Zohar Kaddish tells us that the nagunim come from the two holy birds, which of course are referring to the Kruvim, but in our parasha of Tezri Mitzvah, the offering of the parasha of the Mitzvah, so the offering of course is straight to Parim Chayis Tahara, so the two pure birds, which is talking about how Netzach and Hayd, those two Kaychas, the two spheres of Netzach and Hayd, are nursing all the way down to Malchus, and we'll talk about that in a moment, we'll see that in the note, and the sound of the birds means the koach of negina, the koach of music, comes from those two birds, the kruvim, and from the two spheres of Netzach and Hay that are identified by the Zohar as being the two birds, the Shteitzi Parim, Chayis Toheres. And when a person hears negunim from a rasha, and it's coming from the birds of impurity, from a very dangerous, a very powerful and dangerous place. And these are not, he's not talking about Mishalim, these are not ideas or concepts. This is the reality of the universe that Rabbi Nachman is just teaching us and explaining to us from the Zohar Kodesh, from the Kisveri. So in foot 93, he brings from page 93, the top line on page 93 on the left-hand side there, on page 93, which says the Meha Nachal. There's one of the commentaries on the Tut HaMaran. The Menachal takes this a step further. He says that through holy song a person can even attain an element of prophecy. Now we learn in Tanakh, and we spoke about this, that we see in Tanakh that in order to inspire Nevuah, instruments, music was played in order to inspire prophecy, inspire Nevuah. So this explanation of the Menachal is that a Niggun has the ability to bring a person to a very, very high level, to the point of prophecy of Nevuah. Elsewhere, Rav Nachman explains that prophecy is an aspect of attaching one's thoughts to the world to come. The Navi has the ability to attach his thoughts completely to that which is beyond this world, beyond Olam Hazeh. And that ability to transcend this world and to focus only on that which is beyond this world, that is the gateway that leads to prophecy. That is, the prophet would shed his corporeality, his attachment to this world. That's why the Rambam tells us in Hilchos Yesod HaTorah, the beginning of Mishnah Torah, the Rambam tells us that with the exception of Moshe Rabbeinu, when a Navi would have a Nevuah, he would go into such a trance that his physical, he would lose control of his physical body. He would faint, and there would be all kinds of shocking things that would happen to the physical messias of the Navi, with the exception of Moshe Rabbeinu, who was able to speak to Hashem in such a way without that happening. That's the unique status of Moshe Rabbeinu's Nevuah that we're not going to go into. But the Navi would shed his corporeality. He would peel away all of his connection to this world, his attachment to this world, and attach himself to God. By doing so, he attained prophecy. That's how you'd be able to come to prophecy. And although prophecy has ceased to exist in the world, so until Nevuah will be restored to us, Yimitzu Shem, with Eliyahu Navi, with Mashiach, so we don't have, right now, we don't have prophecy. The source of prophecy still exists. This is something that we've been learning over and over and over again in the Svarim of the Pius Etzen and in the Eish Kodesh, that there are dargis, there are levels of Nevuah. Prophecy, Nevuah as it was in the time of the Nevi'im, we don't have anymore. But there are still prophetic elements. There are still kaiches. The sharish of nevuah can still be tapped into. Just it can't be drawn down in such a way of pure, unadulterated nevuah the way that it was in the time of the Nevi'im. But prophecy still exists. Only now, the way to reach it, the way to shed one's attachment to the vanities of this world, is through holy song. The most powerful means that we have now, the most powerful way of tearing off the corporeality, the gashmis, the physicality of our lives, is through holy song, through holy negina. When someone listens to the singing of a virtuous person, and that's not only the song, but when hearing the song from an El Chayid, and especially if you hear the song from a Tzaddik, that a Tzaddik is singing a song. When someone listens to the singing of a virtuous person, he can attach himself to God. Remember that that niggun is coming to this world from those same two birds, which is Netzach and Hay, the two Kruvim. Even though we don't see the Kruvim right now with our eyes, the Kruvim still exist. In Yerushalayim underneath, there's still Kruvim. And the niggun of a tzaddik comes into the world through such a place, and it can lift a person up to the highest point of being in the, not to say nevuah, but to be in the parasha of nevuah, to be able to have an unbelievable experience of closeness to Hashem. If the song is joyous, he attaches himself to God in joy. So there are certain niggunim that are joyous. All the songs of the goyim and of the rishayim, all of their songs are depressing. All of the songs cause, we'll talk more about that as you go further along, all of the songs of the goyim cause depression. Rabbi Nachman said in many cases they cause suicide. He held that music from rishayim is often responsible for suicide. We never would have thought of such a thing. If you would have said that to me 30 years ago, I would have said, what are you talking about? Something can cause suicide for a nigga. But you see that the subject and the mood of music has very openly turned into such a direction that it's very frightening. And I have heard of such a nyana. I've heard of such a nyana. So if the song is joyous, but we have joyous songs, and then a person can attach himself to Hashem in joy. If the song is meditative, meaning it's a song of a dveikus, it's a slower meditative song, it's a slower song, then he attaches himself to Hashem through yearning. And they're in the gunim of hishtarkikus, of tshukus. That's a song of dveikus. It's not the same thing as a song of simcha. Either way, a person can become attached to HaKadosh Baruch Hu through simcha, or through or in a way of even of merius and of dveikus and so on, to become attached to HaKadosh Baruch Hu through yearning. Holy song is thus extremely beneficial to his attaining an element of prophetic vision. Therefore, in all the writings of the Mikrobolim and the Tzaddikim, music, and not only in their writings but in their practices, music was a very, very, very important part of how they achieved their madrigas. It was a very important part. The Ikar de Shabbos is also, the Ikar de Shabbos is written by Nachum Sharon. From Sharon, that's a sefer that takes all of Rabbi Nachum's Torahs and ties them into Shabbos. Very important sefer, very hard sefer. Ties all of the Torahs into Shabbos, Ikar de Shabbos. The Ikar de Shabbos adds that this is why Shabbos is so closely associated with song. Why is it that Negina is such an important part of Shabbos? Shabbos is the time of the week when one can best contemplate his relationship with God, and so song is an intrinsic element of the day. Since on Shabbos, Shabbos is of course the most wonderful opportunity to get closer to Hashem, we need Zemiris and Negunim to bring us to that place. That's why singing is so much a part of Shabbos. There's mirrors of Shabbos. There are songs of Shabbos also, the songs of Simchana, or the songs that are more songs of Dveikus and Hizbainanus, but the songs of Shabbos are very, the songs of Shabbos are very much a part of whatever madrega a person is able to achieve on Shabbos. It depends a lot on the Nigunim. I just saw recently in a sefer, there was a certain tzaddik says in the sefer that a couple came to him, they were having very big, very, very big problems in Sholem Bayis, and you know, it was very bad between them. And they went to the tzaddik, and the tzaddik recommended that they sing more Shabbos Mirrors. They don't sing Shabbos Mirrors. Because he asked, the tzaddik said, do you sing Shabbos Mirrors? He said, no, not really, you know. So the tzaddik said, Shabbos Mirrors. And it was unbelievable. I mean, like you think, was one thing after the other. It's a lot cheaper than therapy. and I'm not saying it works for everybody, obviously, but that tzaddik saw that there was an inyan that was missing of Nagina in the family. It was missing, Shabbos Naguna was missing the family, and they had to make sure. And he said in the Sefer that this person went afterwards, this was something that happened in New York, then he went to a big Makubal in Eretz Yisrael, and the Makubal asked him about, he was talking to Makubal asked him what, and he said, this happened that we went, that we were having problems last year in Shalom Bayis, and we went to the certain Tzaddik in New York, and the Makubal said, no, and what did he tell you? So they said, he told us to sing Shabbos Mirrors. So the Makubal was very nispoil. He didn't explain. He just says, wow, that's a real tzaddik that told you such a thing, Shabbos Mirrors. That has the koyach, because it's very much connected to the zivug between a husband and wife. The Shabbos, of course, is Malchus, Yisrael and Malchus, and the Zmiris, Zema Aritza means to break away things, remove things that are bad, and to bring an attachment that comes to Netzach and Haida Malchus. It's a very big thing on Shabbos, and it could help with a lot of things to sing Shabbos Mirrors, to sing. Back on top though, let's look on top. So that's good stuff, but when a singer is wicked, on the top of page 93, Uchshah Menagin Hurasha, but when a singer is wicked. Do you remember that Rabbi Nachman was saying all this about that chazan that was a rasha in town? That's when Rabbi Nachman said the Torah. But when a singer is wicked, so you might think that he takes his niggun from no place. Not true. When a singer is wicked, he takes his song from other birds, from those of the klipa, of the evil forces. Thus it is written in the Zohar that the birds of the klipa nurse from the breasts of Malchus. When midnight comes, a cry goes out. Says the cry is the pasuk Ketziporim ha'achuzais bapach kehem yoikshim ben adam. As birds are caught in a trap, so are the children of men ensnared. And if the singer is wicked, when a person hears him and is attracted by his singing, he too becomes trapped in that evil snare. As it is written in the Zohar, so are the children of men ensnared in that trap, which is trapping the evil birds at midnight. So a person who listens and is connected to those birds by listening to the negunim of Rishayim is also somehow ensnared in that trap of the tumah of those klipas of the two birds. Now we need to understand on a much more basic level what this is. So let's before we go further to see what the remedy is for this, and how we could protect ourselves, and how we could even try to, what we could do to try to extract some of the poison that many of us have. That many of us have been injected with over the years by listening to, by being in the world where we're surrounded by all kinds of negunim, all kinds of songs. So footnote 9, if you hear from a menagin who is a rasha, Rabbi Nachum now addresses the converse to holy song, listening to profane song, or even holy song, but from an unworthy person. Even if it's a song, even if it's a nice niggun. The chazan back there in town wasn't singing from the top 10, you know, on the radio. He was singing in the gunim. He was singing from the zmiris. He was singing from the siddur, right, from the machzor. So it doesn't mean just that it's a goyish song, or that it's a bad song. means even if it's a nice, even if it's a nice song, it's a nice, beautiful words, or it's a nice niggun, it's a song that comes from tzaddikim, whatever. But it's coming from an unworthy person. The source of a virtuous person's song is of a spiritual nature, and not readily observable. We don't see the difference. To us, it looks the same. If it's a nice niggun, what's the difference who's singing it? What's the difference? Somebody was telling me that there was a that they saw on a website or something, a Jewish website, that there was a choir of black women who were singing Shlomo Kalibach or something. A school of boys and girls that were singing Kalibach. Did they say with the tough or with the soft? It's important for me to know that. Because I want to use it as a raya. With the soft, there you go, you see that? Okay. So I'm sure they're very, very nice people, especially if they were kids. They were nice kids and they were singing a song. But a person could say what's the difference? It's a niggun. So what difference does it make? Who sings the niggun? What difference if it's a Jewish person, if it's a not Jewish person? What's the difference? Who sings the niggun? If it's a Jewish person, what type of a person? To us, it looks the same. So if that chevra there in that school, whatever it is, if they were able to listen enough times and they were able to get the words right, you know, you'd say, why can't I? You know, I'm going to get this on my iPod to have the Tabernacle Choir singing, singing Oydavino Chai or something. So we don't see what's the chiluk. As long as it's nice music, as long as it sounds good. That's what nowadays, yes, the average person now, the average kid for sure, in yeshiva or whatever, they don't see what's the difference. What's the difference of how much of how ill a chayid who's singing the niggun? What's the difference? So people think in a shul too, what's the to daven for the yom, what's the difference? I spoke a little bit of Rosh Hashanah between Mincha Maariv one day about that. But who? Or maybe it's not true, I don't remember. But so you think, who cares? What's the nafkimah? Who's singing the song? Who's singing the song? So you can go and go to Chasen, the Jewish bands, and they're going that are playing also. With the bands, they're going that are playing. I don't know if there are too many, but some of them I know for a fact over the years that some people have told me that guy, that drummer is a goy, this guy, this is a. So, and the people that are Mechalei Shabbos that are also playing or singing or something, I don't know if singing, but playing. This is, to a person, looks like everything's the same. Comes out nice. So you have a Kala's walking down to a chuppah, and you guys, a Michal Shabbos is playing, you know, on the violin. It's not so passionate. I know that might cause the whole, you know, Jewish music industry to have to fold up. You know, where are you going to get enough, you know, from violin players and so on? Okay, say this. So then, you know, that's a question of, when it comes to these things of believing in these things and accepting that there's something very, very great and mysterious that's taking place with a niggun. And there's a tremendous responsibility. If a person is blessed with a koich of nigina, what an unbelievable responsibility it is to try to keep it in the right way. To try to keep it in the right way, that it should be the kedusha, the tahara, it should be in a way of holiness. So we don't see the spiritual nature, not of when a good Jew is singing a niggun, and not when it's a Jew that's not good, or when it's, God forbid, a guy that's singing it. We don't see the difference. It sounds to us like it's a niggun, but it's not true. The same can be said of the wicked person. His song is also rooted in hidden sources. The same way that the niggun of an elochid comes from the tzad, it comes from a very high place. A niggun, niggun come from a high place, even if it's a niggun of a rasha. You see how people get into music. It's a very remarkable thing how people get into music. How people, I was talking about, you mentioned a choir, a black choir. They're very, very labored, you know. I was passing by once in Far Rockaway, and the doors were open, and I didn't even intend to look there on Central Avenue. and I,
impossible?
Yeah, I was passing, non-central, on Mat,
Carnegie.
I was passing by there once. I was just walking out with the kids who were going somewhere. And there was like a whole big, it was very late with the kid. Like just the door open for a second, they were like, yeah, but I was dancing and going, so I thought it was very nice, you know. It's like it's right that they you know enjoy it and they get into that. It's very very nice. It's not stam. They're going to come from a high place, a very big place, and people. The music industry is a very 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 powerful. Has a huge influence on people. So Shlomo Melech referred to this as Hashem made one to contrast the other. Zelu mazeh selukim. Just like holy music is so powerful to inspire. Unholy music is very powerful to inspire, but to inspire, God forbid, something in the way of tumah. However, in the wicked person's case, his inspiration comes from the unholy and the impure. The man achal defines a wicked singer as one whose singing is motivated by personal gain, for great wealth, honor, fame. It's a very tough thing to live by. The man achal says doesn't necessarily have to be like he's a rosh in his observance of mitzvahs. But if his singing is motivated by personal gain for wealth, honor, and fame, that's the responsibility of a person who's singing for Jews. If it's motivated by something that's impure, even though it's not achas kamavakami, you see sometimes you see by chasnas. I don't know what the heter is. Honestly, you see these balin the menagim that they're standing there by the women, and the women are dancing in front of the men. A man is standing singing on the stage, and he's singing there. In between, by the mechitza, whatever, by the men and by the women. He's standing there by women dancing. He's going to say he doesn't care, he doesn't look, he doesn't think that the 300 women are dancing and jumping and so on. And you have a yid standing there with a microphone with his eyes closed. You know? The more closed the eyes are, the more he's looking. You understand? That's with the closed eyes. Why does he have to stand over there? I never understood that. Why does he have to stand over there? Why can't he stand by the men? You can't follow the beat or something? So, I mean, what is it? I never understand what that means. If anybody could offer a teretz, maybe I'd be interested in hearing it. The women, they sing the same music for the guys and the girls. It's one song. They're not doing different than women. So let them figure it out, the girls. They'll figure it out. What's the matter? They know how to dance, the ladies. They don't have to. They certainly. My wife tells me she's often felt very uncomfortable. She says, plus, you always have certain men that they always go over to the women's side. It's like, that's a machla. The men that they just stand there when the women are dancing. They just stand there when the women are dancing. It's like, look, and sometimes it's older guys, too. It's like, they understand. But, okay, no. That's a different kind of a machla. But then you have the musicians that they have established such a thing that they'll go and they'll stand on a stage or they'll stand on the floor by the thing and they're singing. The women are here and the men are here. What Talmud Chacham or Sadik ever told them that they could do that? I don't know what had to this. The only had that you could think of is, you want to say this, like Rabbi Avad Yosef wrote a tshuva about someone that's what's it called, the lifeguard, because Agav, he's busy with his, you know, most of the people don't agree with it, but since he's busy because it's his profession, it's a malacha, so then, you know, because you could tell that Rav Avadia was never at such a place in his life, because that he's busy, you know, like he's busy with his profession, which means what? Like putting suntan oil and adjusting his headphones and his binoculars, right? So because he's busy with his malacha, so he's not paying attention, the Eitz HaRa is not working. I'd like to see a firm musician to tell me that he's so orangutan in his malacha of the negunim of kedusha that he doesn't have a machshava to stand there when there are women dancing. That, I don't know who even said such a thing, or who told them such a thing. Hashem Yirachem. These are things that should be pushed to anybody that has a little bit yeshamayim, and there are things that could be done. I've seen elcha balam negina that they don't do that they go over with the men. I've seen that. That they don't go with the women, or they stay with the men. And what might not be as effective? So what? So what if they're not so effective? And less effective, that's not a terrorist either. That a person should be Magari's Yitzhak, then let him go get a different job. You know, to stand there watching, spends half his life singing to women. we have you had these chazonim that they were also singing from over the, you know, over the mechitza, sending love letters over the mechitza with their chazonis. Yeah, these are things that are very serious things. It's a good thing it's only theoretical, it's not the mice, I hope. So this comes from the birds, but from the birds of the klipa. So in footnote 10, just as there are two holy birds, Netzach and Hod, from which prophecy emanates, right? There are two holy birds, Netzach and Hod, from which prophecy emanates, so too there is an opposing pair of birds whose source is the evil forces of the other side, the klipas. These two birds are the source of prophecy for the other side, as well as the source of song for the wicked. Is it scary? In essence, these two birds of the klipa are the source of all forms of false prophecy. Again, false prophecy, we're not talking about some Meshigna that stands up on the subway and says that, you know, the sky is falling. That's not called the Navi Sheker. It's Tam, Meshigna, right? The Navi Sheker is a chosh of the thing. The things that he's saying, he's saying a lot of stuff that looks good and comes true and so on. I'm not going to go into all the halachas. That's also an Yisai Yatar of Navi Sheker. It's a powerful thing, a Navi Sheker. So he could say 95% that looks like it's mamish, you know, on the button. And let's say he says, and everything comes true, and he says one inyan that's not like it's supposed to be in halacha, right? One inyan that's not the way it is in halacha. So he says he's a Navi Sheker. One thing that's not like the Torah is a Navi Sheker. In other words, he says something that from now on we don't have to put on we don't have to put into the tefillin four parashiyos, we can put three parashiyos in the tefillin, right? Or if there's any mitzvah of the Torah that no longer applies, or if there's a new mitzvah, it comes along and says Ranai mitzvah, there's something different. So there's a Navi Sheker. And here's a person that has been predicting things that have been coming true every single time, right on the button. It's a very powerful koyach in the world of this kind of Nevius of Sheker. The source of the koyach of Navi Sheker, even Bimeinu, there are people that could make predictions and do different things like that. Not to such an extent, but there are people that have koyachs. There are Jews that I know that go to fortune tellers and I met people like that. They go to people and they come back and they tell me this is... I just had a conversation, not with an actual person, but someone who told me that his brother goes to such a person. There's a brother that's having some hard things going on. And he got hooked up with some spiritualist in Manhattan somewhere, and some lady. And he comes back saying that the every single thing that she says is... it's unbelievable. She says this, like this, like that. There are some people that have these kaychas, and it's coming from a place of, it could be coming from a very high place, a very dangerous place, from where the false prophets take something. Again, it's not mamish on the Madrega, it used to be a Navi Sheker, but it's something, epis, something that's dangerous. It's a powerful thing. In a modern day context, on a different level, in a modern day context, They are the source from which false leaders derive their ill-conceived, ill-intentioned teachings that lead people astray. This koyach, from where false prophecy comes, which is the two birds, which is the koyach of Negina, false leaders, people who are able to develop cults, and to charm people, and to lead people astray with speaking and lessons and ideas and so on that sound very, very nice. It's also tapping into that place. For only those with a pure das, the faculty by which man filters and incorporates the light, the awareness, knowledge provided by the Meichen, can teach and guide others in the proper way. So it's even though singing is on the highest level, but speaking and teaching as well, one has to be very, very careful that the kaychus to give over Torah, that should be drawn from a place that's holy and that's pure. That's a whole different subject. It's the very beginning too. As Amnoson explained, the voice has the power to arouse one's mind to great levels. So it's a singing voice and even a speaking voice. It has the ability, voice has a tremendous koyach, voice. But making proper use of this expanded mentality requires das. Lacking this, the song of a wicked person is profane. So the wicked person doesn't have that das of Kedusha. And therefore the song of a wicked person, even if at that moment he's not thinking of anything bad, but the mind of a Rasha is perverted in all different ways. And therefore the Meichen, the intellect that goes into that act of singing, is descending from Meichen, from a place, an intellect of Tumah, Das, that's not a Das of Kedusha, it's a Das of Tumah. And that goes through the Netzach and Hoid, but this doesn't go through the Netzach and Hoid of Kedusha, the two birds of holiness. When the song comes from an intellect that's impure, from a mind that's impure, then that song makes a left turn, and it goes through the two birds on the other side. The opposing two birds of the klipas of Netzach and Hoid, and that harms us. The song of a wicked person is profane and thus easily misleads those who listen to it. Therefore, songs can cause a person to become. Songs have, as we've been learning all along, can have a tremendous impact upon a person's moods and feelings and so on. And Avodas Hashem, lacking this. I'm sorry, mislead those who listen to it. Reb Nosson therefore states that it is the lack of interaction between voice and speech that allows evil to develop to the point where wicked singers are able to draw people away from God. It's that point, in that nekuda of the voice that comes down from the intellect of impurity, as opposed to an intellect that's pure, to a mind that's filled with proper thoughts, l'shem shamayim, and Torah, and to be mechazik Jews with a song, with a niggun, and so on and so forth. That is the point of departure, where the mic and the intellect is impure, and the voice becomes enclosed in the two impure birds, and that has a detrimental effect upon our Avodas Hashem. And that is meant by when the Rebbe says that the birds of the klipa are nursing midadei hamalchus. They're being nursed from the breasts of malchus, midadei hamalchus. And here's where. This note is essential, as we already learned, and he already has told us that Rabbi Kremowitz says that wherever it's possible not to have to refer to Inyanim and Kabbalah and to explain it on the simplest level, that's done. But there are certain basic concepts that we have to have in order to be able to move forward and to understand what's going on. So he explains it in a very, very simple way, but even simple is not so simple. So footnote 11. Nursed from the breasts of Malchus. Fundamental to the Kabbalah's understanding of the act of creation is a system of so-called filters that Hashem established in order to enable His awesome light to descend to the farthest reaches of existence. So we know this, that the infinite light of Hashem has to go through these different levels of filters of the spheres that are called spheres in order to reach all the way down into our lives. This infinite light is the source of life and vitality that sustains everything, from the holiest of holies to the most ungodly of all His creations. But for this light to be beneficial, it must undergo a series of contractions, passing through so-called filters of spheres and spiritual worlds. Only then can each creation receive the light, on page 92, commensurate with its own level, and draw from it the degree of vitality or bounty it needs for its existence, everything in the world. In terms of the sphere hierarchy, the light descends through Keser to Chochma, through Chochma to Bina. Those are the spheres of Meichen. Sometimes it's Chochma, Bina, and Das. I'm not going to go into why it's sometimes Keser, Chochma, Bina, and sometimes Chochma, Bina, and Das. Actually, I just got the other day that Rabbi Chaim Kramer just came out with a beautiful, beautiful new book on the subject of self-actualization, a beautiful book. And what's it called? Hidden... can't remember right now the title, a beautiful book, and it really, it goes through each of the spheres and explains all of the koiches in a very, very clear way. It's a whole book. So in terms of the light descends through Kesed, the Chochmah, through Chochmah, the Bina, through the six spheres that make up Zer Anpin Tamachus. The six spheres of Chesed, Gvurah, Tiferes, Netzach, Chayit, and Yesod. The spheres of that are called Zer Anpin. Again, we're not going to talk about what these names mean. But Zer Anpin, that, and then all the way down to the lowest sphere, which is called Malchus. It has then traversed one entire world and is ready to descend on to the Kesser of the next world. From world to world. And in each world there are 10 spheres. More generally, the 10 spheres of each world are divided into 3 or 4 groupings. The highest grouping of any particular world is its Meichen. In each of the worlds, the highest grouping is the grouping of Chabad, of the Meichen, of the intellect. The mnemonic by which this grouping is known is Chabad, Chochmah, Bina, and Das. Its function with regard to the infinite light is to receive from the world above it. Chabad are the highest madrigas of the intellect of Meichen, and the job of Chabad is to be able to receive the first direct dosage that comes from the highest, from the higher world of the crown of Kesser. After doing so, Chabad filters that which it received and passes it on to the second grouping. The mnemonic by which this next grouping is known is Chagas, Chesed Gvur Tferes, the heart and center of that particular world. Chagas receives the light from Chabad and filters it on to the third grouping. The mnemonic for this group, the lower regions of that world, is Nehi, Netzach, Hayd, and Yesod. We're living through this now in Sefer Yesayim. After receiving this twice filtered light from Chagas, Nehi passes it on to what is the lowest sphere of any given world, which is called, of course, Malchus. The Zohar teaches that unlike the other spheres, Malchus has no substance or light of its own, only that which it receives from the spheres above it. Malchus only has, doesn't generate a light of its own. The Malchus is dull, it's impoverished, and it only has what it receives. Leis lemegamei klum, it has nothing of its own. It only has the light that it receives, that as it's been filtered down from the higher spheres. Therefore, the culmination of this process, Malchus receiving from Netzach and Hayd, through Yesod down to Malchus, is known as the nourishing or the building up of Malchus. Building up the nursing and the nourishing of Malchus. Remember, Malchus is like a baby that just has nothing of its own, only what it receives. If you leave a baby by itself, a human baby is totally helpless, doesn't have a light of its own. So the Malchus has to be nursed. And it's nursed by the highest spheres. Specifically, in referring to the formula that leads to prophecy, and where Negina comes from, the nursing is most directly connected to Netzach and Hayd. But it always has to come through down. It always has to come down through all the spheres. But this is called the nourishing or building up of Malchus, with the light itself becoming Malchus's Meichen. And then that light penetrates into Malchus, and then becomes, in Malchus, becomes the Meichen, becomes then that the Chabad and the Chagas and the Nehim in the world of Malchus. The need for drawing vitality from the infinite light also applies to the forces of evil. Now, what he's describing so far, we're talking about in the pleasant world of holiness. But the same way that the world of holiness functions with the 10 spheres, so too the forces of evil draw their vitality, their life and energy from the infinite light of God. And if there would be no light of God, then the forces of evil that would have no vitality, would have no life. They couldn't live. Nothing can exist without tapping into the infinite light of God. Hashem made the world in such a way, of zeh luma zeh, that there is this possibility. So the need for drawing vitality from the infinite light also applies to the forces of evil. The klipas too are God's creation. Evil and the klipas are God's creation, and so depend upon his infinite light for existence. Were they unable to sustain themselves by drawing from the light after it passed through the filters of holiness and descended into malchus, the klipas could not survive. They would have no life force. There would be no energy. The only way that the klipas can be nurtured, can be nourished, the klipas themselves are being nursed from the malchus of tumah, from the malchus of impurity. Thus, in the context of our lesson, the two birds of the klipa also draw their nourishment from malchus, more specifically, the nihi of malchus. So in the context of what we're talking about, what Rabbi Nachman is saying is that the birds of the klipa nurse from the breasts of malchus. It means that the klipas that are roaming in this world, that are functioning in this world, and the two birds of impurity of tumah are two of the main and most powerful klipas. They are also drawing their nourishment from malchus, but again, malchus here doesn't mean from the end. It means, remember that once the light enters into malchus, then it could be drawn from malchus also in a good way, or it could be drawn in a bad way. And in this world we have a malchus of kedusha, and there's the malchus of tumah. We daven for it every single day. And the malchus of Isha, Shemehir, Sakya, Shabbos, Magad, the malchus of impurity, and the malchus of holiness. Expanding on the metaphor of nursing or suckling an infant, human or animal, the Kabbalah teaches that the breasts which nourish the klipas are found in the lower extremities of malchus, as an udder. Just like the udder is found on the bottom of the behemoth, and the animals, the babies, are nursing from the bottom, the lower extremities of malchus. In the structure of the spheres, the breasts correspond to the area of Netzach and Hoid, paralleling the source of nourishment of the two birds of holiness. The two birds of holiness are nourished from Netzach and Hoid. Netzach and Hoid in Kabbalah correspond to the dadim, to the two breasts. The reason for this is that these two birds of the klipa represent the meichin of malchus on the other side. And as explained, the meichin of malchus are built through Netzach and Hoid, are nursed through Netzach and Hoid. The binyan of malchus is nursed through Netzach and Hoid. Therefore, the two birds of the klipas of impurity are connected and are being nourished and nursed by these spheres of Netzach and Hoid in Tumah. The Ari explains further that while it is true that the Meichen of the Klipas draw nourishment both day and night, the evil forces are most dominant at night. The Ari HaKadosh says in many places that even though, of course, evil functions by day and night, but the forces of evil are most dominant at night. We're going to see about that more later on. During the day, the attribute of loving kindness from the sphere of Chesed prevails. During the day, the sphere of Chesed is stronger than the sphere than the sphere of Gevurah and the Gevurahs. The Chesed is stronger during the day. So the Klipa's nourishment and therefore strength is minimal. Since the sphere of Chesed prevails during the day, is stronger during the day, so it's harder for the Klipa to be nourished and to be strengthened during the day. It's harder, although it can be, but it's harder. At night, however, the attribute of judgment from the sphere of Gevurah prevails. Now, once Gevurah prevails, Gevurah is stronger at night. From Gevurah, dinim amis, there are dinim, there are things, there are negative things that are misoira, that come from Gevurahs. And then the two birds of the klipas, are able to draw a greater amount of nourishment. So what happens? Something happens at midnight. That's what Menachem was saying, that when midnight comes, a cry goes out about the birds being ensnared. So in footnote 12, a cry goes out. The night, which signifies judgment and gvuras, the night, that's why Lo'aleinu people, you see that when someone's sick, the temperature is usually higher at night, and other symptoms get worse at night. I don't know if more people die at night or less. I don't know if studies like that are made. But the night, we know, is a time of Helam and of Hester. It's a time when the gvuras are stronger at night. But the night, which signifies judgment, has two parts, before and after midnight. There are two parts to the night. The initial period of the night is the harsher half. The earlier part of the night is the harsher half. Is the gruas are stronger until midnight. From the time of Tzeisik Chavim, from the time of night, when night begins, till the time of midnight, the gruas are at the strongest point. The initial period of the night is the harsher half, a time when the klipas have access to higher levels and draw greater nourishment at that time. Were this to continue unchecked, if the klipas are able to gain more and more strength from the gurus from that side, then the forces of the other side will become extremely powerful and adversely affect the creation even more than they already have. However, the process by which the klipas nurse, next page, on page 95, nurse and gain strength, that same process also lures them into being ensnared in the lower realm. In other words, and these are things that it's hard to explain and it's to know when it's not the right thing to talk about, but the same process by which the klipas are nursing and gaining strength, that same process, they're getting filled and getting stronger, that same process also lures them into being ensnared in the lower realm. This happens at Chatzais. That's why Chatzais is an unbelievably powerful time. We're crossing over from the Gevuras to the Hamtokeh, the sweetening of the Gevuras in Chasodim, when the side of impurity was thought that it's going to become stronger and stronger and stronger, more and more powerful, and then suddenly becomes ensnared in the web, in the trap of Chasodim that begins at midnight. So the whole Indian of Tikkun Chatzais is connected to that, crossing over from the time of Gevuras to the beginning of the Hamtakas, the sweetening that begins as we move towards the morning. So the second part, the post-midnight time of the night, is already leaning towards the direction of Chasadim, of Chesed. As birds are caught in a trap, birds are loose to the two birds of Klipa, which become caught in the trap at midnight, that the children of man ensnared. That's what it says in the Pasuk. Those people who are associated with these two birds draw their nourishment from the klipas. Their choice of this source of nourishment causes them to become trapped in their evil desires and lusts, which we know that those who are evil, they think that they're getting stronger and stronger, and the more they have their pleasures, the more they become ensnared, and the more ruined they become, and the more destroyed they become. Listening to a wicked singer who draws from these two birds and listening to profane song is therefore detrimental to serving God. Moreover, this strengthening of Malchus of the other side invariably adds strength to the Klipas. On the physical level, this results in corrupt kingdoms and governments, Malchus governments, growing stronger and the exile being extended. All of this happens as a result of listening to the singer who's wicked, who's tapping into the two birds of impurity, that's gaining more and more strength and strengthens the malchus of impurity, which means it's also strengthening the governments of impurity that are in this world. And it causes the girls to get longer and longer. Conversely, through a song that is holy, malchus of holiness is uplifted and elevated. David HaMelech is lifted up, and the malchus of Kedusha is lifted up, so that God's kingdom is revealed in the world. Thus, David HaMelech, the personification of Malchus of Holiness, rose from sleep to the sound of song. At midnight, the harp that hung above his bed began playing on its own, and he would awake. As everybody knows, the Gemara tells us that the harp would begin to play, and he would wake up. In his words, as in Tehillim, right? Awake my glory, Aira Shachar. Uva Kevoidi, Aira Shachar. Awake my glory, awake, O harp and lyre, I will awaken the dawn, Aira Shachar. After praying, he would spend the rest of the night in study. We're going to see what that's about next week. For nighttime study corresponds to rectified song. The way to fix impure music is through studying Torah at night, in particular. As the personification of Malchus of Holiness, it was most fitting that David Melech also said, at midnight, I will rise. Why specifically midnight? We know that Malchus corresponds to night. Why not another hour of the night? Later on, however, the rectification of Malchus starts specifically then. The tikkun and the sweetening of Malchus begins exactly at midnight. Again, when midnight is in that particular place, it doesn't have to necessarily be 12 o'clock. We'll talk about that at a different time. When the judgments are stayed, at that point judgment is held back and loving kindness begins to be revealed. Elsewhere, the Zohar teaches that the entrapment and defeat of the Klipas at midnight is mainly an account of those who rise and study Torah at that time. This will become clear from the next paragraphs. Okay, so this is where we're going to continue with a little bit of a review and to speak about the remedy and to understand on a simpler level exactly what's happening with the good Nagunim and with the bad Nagunim. Shkayach.